Hey, it's Carla Renata with The Curvy Critic. I got some hair love. I got Britney running a marathon and the 80th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz. Stay right there.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hello, 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 hello. This is Carla Renata, and you have joined The Curvy Critic with me at Black Hollywood Live Sunday, August 18th. It's a lot going on, so let me just hip you to it. But before I do that, if you are watching this on YouTube, please give me a big old thumbs up to let me know you were there. Also, run over to Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, and leave me a comment. Let me know how I'm doing. I love you. If you give me love back, I'll give it right back to you. So if you give me love, I'll give you love right back is what I was trying to say. I said that backwards. Anyway, So many movies, so little time. So I just want to make a couple of announcements before I get into it. I will not be here next week, and I won't be here the week after that. But what I will do is I will do a pre-taped situation for you guys so that you don't miss out on all the love next week. And I'll talk more about that at the end of the show. But right now, I want to talk about a short film that previews right before Angry Birds Movie 2. And I talked a little bit about it last week, and I think I teased that I would have an interview with the writer-director Matthew Cherry and the producer Peter Ramsey, who's the Oscar winner for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I just like saying that because I'm a big old Peter Ramsey fan. He knows that. But Hair Love is this short. It's about 6 minutes long. It plays right before you see Angry Birds. And it's for dads. It's for any kind of dad that has ever sat down and tried to comb his child's hair, whether it be a boy or a girl. But in this particular instance, it's a young man trying to comb his daughter's hair. And I sat down with Matthew and we talked about the short. We talked about how they met and we talked about a little bit of chocolaticity. And if you don't know what that is, take a listen and you'll find out.
Was done with the narrative being told right. Just through the actions right. And with the
right.
Music.
Right.
Was that a conscious choice to do that?
Yeah. You know, with a lot of the shorts I've seen over the years, it just seems like with the budget range that we were working at, that trying to add a lot of voiceover work with it would have been a little bit of a challenge. And for us, we just thought it would help really the storytelling if you can kind of catch the story by just what they were doing with their actions and kind of facial expressions and their acting. So, yeah.
So I tweeted you over the weekend This picture of my dad.
Yep.
Trying to comb my hair
because
I was a runner, so my dad was kind of holding me between his legs, and my godfather was the one that was actually trying to comb my hair.
Wow, that was a two-man job.
I will show you there when we're
is.
done.
But okay.
When I saw this, I boohooed like a baby because it immediately brought me right back to that time. And ironically enough, even though Zuri is going to the hospital to see her mother for different circumstances, my godfather and my father were getting me prepared to go to the hospital because my mother had just given birth to my little brother. So we were going to So imagine, I'm watching this, it was a hot mess.
Awesome.
I know that you did a Kickstarter campaign for this and that your goal was 75, but you got like over 285K and it was like the most money anybody ever got on a Kickstarter campaign ever.
Well, for a short film,
Yeah. Were you excited about that? That's something.
Yeah.
Like, I would be stoked about that.
Yeah. It was crazy. It was probably, you know, I've done a lot of cool stuff in my life and that was probably the most crazy thing I've ever been a part of in my life. Yeah, you know, I've done two prior Kickstarter campaigns and it was like a struggle to raise a little bit of money we were trying to do. I think we tried to raise like $15,000 and it was just reaching out to all the, you know, people I went to high school with and in college and everything. And then with this, it was, I don't know, it just was organic. Like, I remember pressing publish on the campaign and then going to work and being like, all right, when I get to work, I'm going to start sending it out. And it already raised like $3,000 or $4,000. I was like, how? I didn't even send it out to anybody yet. And like that day, it had hit like 10,000 and just every day. And then I think about in the first 5 days we hit the goal of 75, and we always did it kind of knowing we would need more and just knowing that with animation obviously it's like a super expensive medium.
Absolutely.
But it just felt like every day something crazy happened. Penguin Random House reached out one day, another day Dove, you know, reached out. So it was just crazy.
Peter, you won the Oscar for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
You a lot during that award season. I was so excited. But the message in Hair Love is pretty much the same message in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, that your uniqueness is the thing that makes you special. Mm-hmm. I wanted you both to speak about that particular thing and the fact, you know, you're taking gender norms and doing mm-hmm. some interesting things with them. So I wanted you guys both to speak to that for a second, if you might.
Yeah, for me, you know, on that score, you know, just the idea on the gender norms thing, it's like, I mean, that's love. You know, you do what you, your parent, you're a man or a woman, you're a father or a mother, you step up and do what you can to help someone you love. In this case, you help them show their love. So the whole thing is all about expression and you know, passing something down from one generation to another. In the Black community, the whole issue of hair, you know, it means so many different things. There's so many different issues tied up with it, that this was such an elegant way of like getting to the heart of what it really is all about, which is just self-expression and love kind of put together in one.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I think for us, our whole idea with this was just like kind of similar to how Peter said, was Zuri, she has a goal in the beginning of this. You know, she wants her hair done for a very specific reason. You know, Dad wasn't really listening to her initially. And, you know, by the end of it, he finally listened to her and he was able to figure it out. And it's really just about, I think, what parents, be that a mom or a dad, is just what parents do for their kids when they love them unconditionally. And it's like, all right, I may not know how to do this, but you want me to do it and I'm going to try to learn the best way I know how. And I'm going to do my best. You know, luckily he had some videos that he could kind of learn step by step how to do it. And, you know, I just think for us, we just wanted to represent for, you know, groups of people that you don't really see in this light. At the time when we did the Kickstarter campaign, you know, this article had come out, I think it was through Mike.com, where it was talking about how African-American men are actually one of the most involved groups of people involved in their kids' lives. But there was always a stereotype that, you know, Black men weren't present in their kids' lives. And so, you know, we just wanted to really help to show a narrative that you don't really see every day, and I think that's part of the reason why so many people connected with it.
You know, immediately, other than thinking about my own dad when I saw it, I thought about that commercial with LL Cool J where he was sitting on the stoop.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was for like Pepsi or something. Uh-huh. He's sitting on the stoop doing his daughter's hair, yeah. And his daughter is like wincing and going, Dad, yeah. Leave me alone. Yeah. I love that commercial, and I love this film, and I love the fact that you made the hair, just her mm-hmm. hair, a third character.
Yep. Yes.
And I love it. Like the hair is his own character by itself. And I love the fact that instead of it just being a film where you're concentrating on him having the struggle to do her mm-hmm. hair, you actually made the hair a character. Mm-hmm. The hair is like beating him up, the comb is like smacking his hand. Mm-hmm. It was pure comedy. I love you both so much for this film. It's gonna do so well, and it's such a great lesson for little girls who have natural hair, they have natural hair, that it's not a bad thing to have natural mm-hmm. hair. It's the hair that you were born with, yep. that you came into this earth with. So this is a great message for that, and I thank both of you for bringing that to the forefront. It's much appreciated.
No, thank you,
man.
How did you two guys collaborate? I know that you probably came to Peter because of Sony, right? Or did you guys know each other before that?
Yeah, well, you know, I was a big fan of his because of his debut feature. Yeah, his movie Rise of the Guardians. Yeah. And, you know, it was this huge thing because he's the first African-American director that was able to, you know, direct a big studio feature in animation. You know, through social media, you know, yeah. I think we got close. Through Twitter. And then, you know, when we were doing this project, I knew because all my work prior was in live action. And so this being kind of my first foray into animation, I knew that I wanted to, you know, kind of surround myself with people that were really just experts in that field. Peter was one of the first people that I reached out to when we were getting the Kickstarter campaign going. I was like, man, you know, I forget what the pitch was exactly.
I think you were like, you know, I got this idea for do you think this would work in animation? And he sent me the mm-hmm. script. And I was like, I read it and I was like, man, this would be amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got heart. It's got comedy. It's got, you know, it's got a unique point of view. It's got all these things that make it just perfect. So I just kind of like pushed and said, go do it.
Yeah. And this was in the middle when he was, you know, in the middle of doing Spider-Verse 2. Yeah. So
that's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, luckily it was
kind of red.
Yeah.
No, okay.
He gave a lot of, you know, great notes and feedback, but, you know, definitely
during the process. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, definitely let us do our thing and, you know, but always chimed in when we needed him. And it was just a great collab and, you know, really, really happy to have him a part.
I'm just going to keep it real. I am so excited that two brothers collaborated in animation. Like, come on. That's like a big deal, you guys. It's huge. And I'm so there for all of this, whatever this is going to be in the future. I'm there for all of it.
Hopefully it's going to happen more and more.
Yeah, for sure. Knock on wood.
I was doing a little bit of research and found out that you were a former NFL player.
Yeah.
Dude, how you go
this from this is, that's okay. When I first heard about Matt, I was like, wait a minute, what?
Right. So how you go from an NFL player to a filmmaker? Like, that's the story right there.
Yeah.
For real.
I mean, you know, I was always into just entertainment. You know, when I was in high school, I was a part of the radio club and the TV club. I majored in radio, TV broadcast. So I knew when I got done playing ball that, you know, I wanted to get into this business and start as a PA and, you know, kind of work my way up. And hopefully this is just kind of the continuation of the story because, you know, I really like animation and would love to keep working in that space.
How many feature films have you made? Two.
Yeah, two features.
Two feature films.
Yeah.
I'm saying I'm there for all of this. Yeah, I'm there for all of this right here, this in the room. Just chocolaticity. I'm all about the chocolaticity.
I'm going to hashtag that.
Hashtag chocolaticity.
Chocolaticity.
Thank you, guys.
No, thank you so much.
I love the fact that we came up with our own hashtag chocolaticity. So y'all can steal that and just talk about this episode of The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata as hashtag chocolaticity, because I really am there for all of that. And I meant what I said about Matthew being an NFL player. That's so fascinating that he went from being an NFL player and one day woke up and was like, you know what, I think I might want to do a little feature film animation joint. And he's doing it, y'all. If you have not seen Angry Birds 2, which is produced by Sony Pictures and so is Hair Love, go check it out. You will get your entire life on, I promise you. Don't let go. I want to say something before we talk about that film. Ava DuVernay clearly knows how to recognize talent. I mean, she's got her pulse on whoever the most talented, hottest, most unknown person is that's out there. And the same is true for Storm Reid, who was in Wrinkle in Time, and David Oyelowo, who's been in several of Ava's films, way too many to even count. But they have teamed up together in a new film called Don't Let Go. It is written and produced by Jacob Aaron Estes, and is written and directed by Jacob Aaron Estes and produced by Blumhouse Productions. And the release date is August 30th. And like I said, I'm talking about it now because I won't be able to do this in real time. And I really want you guys to have your ears and eyes open for it. Let me tell you something. This movie right here had me on the edge of my seat the entire time. I felt like I was watching, like, it was like Fast Colors meets some kind of Hitchcock movie, like Rebecca or something. It was crazy as hell. The movie was crazy as hell, but I was there for all of it. It was so good. It's about this young man named Jack. He's a detective on the police force, and Micheletti Williamson plays his partner partner in crime at the police station. And what happens is he ends up with this really weird version of ESP where he's able to see a couple of days into the future and sees that there's a murder that's about to take place that's going to affect him greatly. Storm Reid plays opposite him. They have a great relationship. They have great chemistry. There were some elements of it, though, that were a little slow, just a little bit, but I was there for all of it. It's like a thriller fantasy, like I said. It had me hook, line, and sinker. I was watching this with my mom, and my mom and I literally were on the edge of the sofa. Like, I kept wanting to get up and get, like, a drink of water or grab a snack, and I just couldn't tear myself away from the screen because I was so invested in the story. It's a nice film because it shows a different character for David Oyelowo. He's played Martin Luther King in Selma. He's been so many different characters in so many different films, and he seems to not repeat himself in the types of characters that he takes on. And this one is no different. And he is just an astoundingly magnificent actor. It's a joy to watch him in anything, whether it sucks or not. This one doesn't suck, but he's just really astounding to watch. And the same goes for Storm Reid. She's, for her to be so young and to be able to tap into her emotions as strongly as she does, it's just really captivating to watch her. She's really on the move, and I hope you guys pay attention to what's going on with her. She's going to be doing some really big things. I'm looking forward to what's next for Miss Storm. I want to shout out Jenna James and Michael B. in the chat room. Hi, you guys. Love talking to y'all every week, as usual. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this film before I play this interview that we did with Jillian Bell, who is the star of this film called Brittany Runs a Marathon. So back in the day when I was in The Lion King, every time I have a milestone birthday, I do something that terrifies me, scares me, that is not necessarily on a bucket list, but something that I've never done before. The last time I had a milestone birthday, I took a bunch of my friends up to wine country and we just got drunk all day. And I don't know what I'm going to do when I have the next milestone birthday. But this particular milestone birthday that coincides with this film, I decided that I was going to run the Honolulu Marathon for AIDS Project Los Angeles. So basically what I did was I raised a buttload of money for AIDS Project Los Angeles. And in return, they trained me to run 26.2 miles in the Los Angeles Marathon. And it was a walk, run kind of method. When I called my father to tell my father that I was that I was going to run a marathon, my father, who is a former Marine and can run 5 miles with his hands tied behind his back, he dropped the phone and laughed at me for about 10 minutes when I said I was going to run a marathon. And he straight up was like, how you going? And when he finally did pick up the phone, he was like, how are you going to run a marathon? You can't even run around the block, which was true. But I did it just to prove him wrong. And so I did run the Honolulu Marathon. I did finish the race. I did run those 26.2 miles. And my mother was there to cheer me on at the finish line. Having said all of that, I can totally relate to this movie, Brittany Runs a Marathon. And I'll talk a little bit more about it after I have this conversation with Jillian, where we talked about the marathon. And her character, that's based on a real person, runs the New York City Marathon. And so we talked about the training for that. We talked about the Groundlings, because we both studied at the Groundlings. And we talked about some other things. So take a listen and I'll review it right after this.
Let's talk about these 4 hours of prosthetics. What did they need to do prosthetics for?
Because we shot the movie in 26 days. I actually went through the exact physical journey that Brittany goes through. I mean, I didn't run an actual marathon or train for it, but I basically trained for the process. I myself lost 40 pounds just to experience what that feels like and how it's connected to the emotional journey of the story. So because we shot it in 26 days and we couldn't shoot it at the beginning of the year and the end of the year, they needed to show the progression of the story and what she looked like from start to finish. So that's why we needed prosthetics. It was pretty close to how I looked at the beginning of when I first got the script. And then I wanted to show the whole transformation. And with that, you know, obviously we don't have a whole year to shoot the film. So
right, exactly.
In a matter of 26 days.
So we have something in common. I studied at the Groundlings as well.
Oh, wonderful. Did you like your experience?
I did. It was really tough because I came from theater into the Groundlings. And, you know, when you do theater and you're doing 8 shows a week, you're not really paying attention to what the person is saying after a while. So the Groundlings taught me to be present. Right. So the Groundlings taught me how to be present.
Yeah, to be present and to be listening to your partner. Like, those are the two main rules. I know it's very helpful.
Now, in training for the film, what was the most challenging thing you learned in training to run? Because I also ran a marathon.
Thank you. That's amazing.
Yeah, I ran the Honolulu Marathon.
Oh, I think that is such an accomplishment. Wow. Yeah, I think just doing all things healthy really was actually a big challenge. You know, I had to eat specific things that my trainer told me to eat, and I was running constantly. And to be totally honest, get a lot of pleasure out of a good meal and a good hang with friends. And it just sort of limited what I was doing. That was probably the hardest part, was just there was so much exercise I was having to do on my own, and then meeting up with the trainer as well, and then basically eating vegetables and protein only. But as soon as the movie wrapped, I had a great meal.
I know that you did. I would have too.
I think I immediately had 2 bowls of cereal and we went out for pasta.
I love it.
I did it up.
I love it. Much like Brittany, New York City is full of contradictions. Do you have anything about you that when someone meets you, they would consider it a contradiction of what you think people expect?
Oh, maybe that I'm a little bit shy. I'm not super shy. I can be very outgoing, but sometimes I like to be very quiet and just observe, and I really like nights at home. I don't know. I've done a lot of films where and TV shows where I'm a partier, and I'm sort of the opposite. I very much enjoy being in my bed and watching Dateline NBC.
That is hilarious.
That's a good night in.
The character of Catherine, which is played by Michaela Watkins, aka Moneybags Martha, I think that Brittany and Catherine suffer from the same fate of other people's expectations. Do you think that that's what initially kind of bonds her and Brittany?
I think that's a very smart observation. I think they're both going through transitional periods in their lives. It's hard to ask for help during those times. We've all experienced that. I have, I know for sure. Where you want to achieve a big goal, but you don't know how to go about it. And sometimes you surround yourself with people who not necessarily want to see you fall, but don't want to see you go beyond what they expect you can do. They want to stay in a comfortable place, and it's hard to watch people transition and exceed their own expectations. So I think both the characters are going through that. I think it's a really interesting observation that not a lot of films talk about, and how scary it is to choose yourself for the first time and do something that goes beyond what the norm is, and how scary that can be, the real raw emotions that go along with changing your life.
You know, the most powerful scene in that movie to me is the one where they're celebrating her brother-in-law's birthday, and
yes,
she goes off,
yes,
on that girl about, well, I'm just saying what everyone thinks. That was a really powerful scene.
Projecting.
Yeah, and it's projecting.
Yeah. It was one of the toughest scenes to shoot. I really loved the woman who was playing Jasmine. Her name is Sarah Bolt. She's a very talented actress. She's done a lot of Broadway. But one of the requests that I had for the film was that I got to hang out with her for a couple of hours before we shot that scene. I wanted to talk to her and to see how she's doing and tell her I've shot those scenes before. I've been on both sides now of that scene. And we both just sort of agreed that it was essential for the film and what we were trying to say about the movie, and that after this, we will never do another scene like that again. I think it really hits home a lot of the themes of the movie, but it is a very hard, unsettling scene to watch and to be a part of.
It was hard for me to watch, and I can only imagine what it was like to shoot that and be in it. Thank you for including that scene, because I think for a lot of young women that are zoftig or curvy or anything in that lane that people like to put a label on, I think that's important for them to see that scene, to see both sides of that coin. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
Yes, it reminds us too that, like, all of us have different bodies. We're all blessed, right? We're all very lucky to have a lot of different bodies in our lives, and honestly, sometimes we're so hard on ourselves. And that scene is a full projection of where Brittany was at. A lot of times in films like this, you'll see a transformation, and you'll see a woman getting losing weight and getting smaller, and everybody just tells her she's beautiful, and that's the end of the movie. And I'm like, what? What is she going through emotionally and mentally? Has she worked on herself and how she feels, and how our society, like, makes that the, oh, she got better because she's lost weight? And it's not a message I want to put out there anymore. I think it's very harmful to put that type of a message out there. This movie showed what it's really like to change your body, to not change your body, in Jasmine's case. And I think it's great to show all sides of that and how women can be truly happy with how they look at whatever size, and that's how we should be showing young girls. That's what we should be showing young women, and women my age and older than that. We need to be shouting this from the rooftop.
Absolutely. Can you tell me, or can you share anything that you may have coming up next that we can check out? Because we love you over at Black Hollywood Live.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you so much. I have a movie out right now called Sword of Trust that I believe it might just be playing in L.A. and New York. It was a Lynn Shelton movie that was completely, mostly improvised. We shot it in 12 days, and it was shot in Birmingham, Alabama. It was amazing. And then I have a movie that I am writing right now, but I can't talk too much about it, but I just want to put it out there. I'm very excited to be writing, and I hope people will like the movie.
And you should be writing. You should put those primetime Emmy-nominated skills to use, my sister.
Thank you.
Well, that is my time, Miss Jillian. I thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and allowing me to interview you. It's really been a pleasure, and good luck to you. And we will continue to support you over here at Black Hollywood Live and myself, the Curvy Critic.
You are a delight. I can't wait till we talk again.
Absolutely. Take care now.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I loved Miss Jillian. She's so vibrant and full of life. And I've seen her in a multitude of different films, like 22 Jump Street and some other films. And she's always in these movies where she might have one or two scenes and she completely steals the film from everybody in it. So I love that this was a film that was solely centered around a character in which she was playing the lead. It made me so incredibly happy. What also made me happy was the fact that it's based on a true story. Brittany is really a girl in New York named Brittany O'Neill. And the director, Paul Downs Collazo, drew on his personal experience for his debut film, which is a love letter to his friend Brittany O'Neill. He, quote, says, "It was born out of a compelling, painful, hilarious, and inspiring journey she took in her late 20s. My concept for the film was to take stock characters from big American comedies, the quote-unquote hot mess, the fat sidekick, and turn the camera squarely in her direction. What's her human story? What does she want? What does she struggle with? And how is her story everyone's story?" Well, Brittany's story is everyone's story, because during the course of Brittany deciding she's going to turn her life around and run this marathon, which she literally, like my dad was teasing me about not being able to run around the block, Brittany literally couldn't run down the block. She couldn't go from one end of the street to the other, and that's how she started. And eventually, she ran and completed the New York City Marathon. But having said that, and it wasn't without its challenges, believe me. You'll see that when you see the film. But having said that, everybody has people in their lives where when you are on a path and you start to grow and you start to change and you start to move in a different direction than where your current group is, some people start to feel some kind of way about that, and they start to treat you some kind of way, and they start to say things that are hurtful and mean. And I don't think they do it intentionally. They do it out of fear. They do it out of fear of losing their friend. They do it out of fear of something that has resonated with themselves that they don't like, that they want to fix, but they're too scared to do something about it. And they're mad that you have the strength and the fortuitousness and the audacity to fulfill whatever that need is that you need to fulfill. And for Brittany, it was for her to complete this marathon. It was really important to her. So I resonated with that film for that reason. I resonated with it because it's Brittany's one of those characters where she's, everybody expects her to be the life of the party. You know, people sometimes when I go places, they expect me to be the life of the party because I am very chatty. I am, you know, very exuberant and very ha 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 ha. But sometimes I don't feel like being that. Sometimes I just want to, you know, lay in the cut and be quiet and watch and observe like everybody else. And when I'm not that, then my actions and my not talking gets misconstrued into something else. So I feel like Brittany Runs a Marathon is one of these films that everybody that watches it is going to walk away with something different that they resonate with. Jillian shouted out Sarah Bolt, who she has this fantabulous scene. It's one of the best scenes in the film. She has this fantabulous scene with Sarah Bolt. Sarah Bolt is a Broadway baby. Sarah Bolt has been in things like Sister Act. She is fan-frickin-tabulous. Check her out, and you're going to love the scene that she's in, and you're going to love Brittany Runs a Marathon. Brittany Runs a Marathon opens this week on August 23rd, and it goes into select cities. So select, whenever I say something's opening in select cities, that means it's probably going to open in like New York and LA and maybe Chicago, and then it goes nationwide on September 13th. So remember that title, Brittany Runs a Marathon, Blumhouse Productions, starring Jillian Bell, Michael Walken, Sarah Bolt, and Lil Rel is in it. So all of those people, Rel Howard, all those people are in it. It's a great film. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry. It's going to invoke all the emotions, but you will walk out a little bit more inspired than when you walked in. All right. Let's see. Michael B in the chat room was like, you know, how did he say it? He said ain't nothing wrong with being curvy. Michael B, you would be surprised at how curvy girls get, you know, get shaded and get ridiculed, and people always have something to say. Some people are naturally born curvy. Some people get a little older and the curves automatically just kind of creep themselves out. Raising my hand. And some people, you know, they just, that's just the way they were. That's just the way they were born. And they, and sometimes people make it hard to embrace that. It's becoming a little easier now. But there was a time that instead of being called curvy, you would just call fat, you know, and people would make fun of you and say that you were fat. There are people that have conditions that cause them to gain weight that they don't have any control over. Like some women get fibroids, and when they get fibroids, they gain weight. They have no control over these fibroids other than fixing their diet. And a lot of times by the time they figure that out, it's too late. They got to get the fibroids taken out. They've already gained the weight. It's a whole thing. But check out Brittany Runs a Marathon. You will enjoy it. I promise you. Let's talk about a little news today. Richard Williams, who was one of the animators or the lead animator on a film called Who Framed Roger Rabbit, he passed away at the age of 86. He was an Oscar winner in 1971 for an animated version of A Christmas Carol. We also lost Peter Fonda, who was the son of Henry Fonda and the sister of Jane Fonda. Peter was a two-time Oscar nominee for his roles in Easy Rider and Uli's Gold, a film that he wrote, directed, and produced. He passed away from lung cancer at the age of 79. That Leaving Neverland is back in the news yet again. I think you guys remember me talking about Leaving Neverland back in January after I saw it at Sundance. And it's been in the news and much controversy ever since then. So since Sundance, the film got picked up and was put on HBO. And I can't remember how many parts of the documentary there were. There might have been two parts. I think it was a two-part documentary. And there have been lots of conversations and things happening. But the biggest thing that's come out of it is that the Jackson estate has hit HBO and the filmmakers with a $100 million lawsuit. And under legal fire from the extremely litigious estate of Michael Jackson, the HBO documentary examining the allegations that Michael Jackson, the star of, not star, but the recording, the multi faceted Grammy-winning, you know, recording artist who's no longer with us. There were allegations that he was sexually abusing children, and the Jackson estate wants the case thrown out once and for all because they feel like it is not fair and that it is unjust to put someone on trial who is in their grave when there's already been a trial where the person was tried and not convicted for that crime, but yet he's in his grave and there's this documentary that's still like, oh, he did it. And the two young men in the film that are saying he did it were the two young men that defended him within an inch of his life when he was alive. So I just find it very interesting that when he was alive, they were rah-rah, sis, boom-bah with some cheerleading pom-poms. And now that he's dead, they're like, oh, look what he did to me. Don't be a coward. Like if that was the truth, then say that when somebody's here where they can defend themselves. Don't do it when they passed away. The plaintiffs claim foul, because they violate the First Amendment due process clause and public policy. And in any event, the contract in which they are based is inapplicable and expired, states the special motion to strike the HBO's powerhouse lawyers, Theodore Boutrous Jr. and Daniel Petrelli. So keep an eye out on that. I'll keep an eye on that case, too, and let you know what's happening with that. I just wish it would all go away. The king of pop, you know, Michael Jackson. That's all I'm going to say about that. That's crazy. Don Cheadle is launching a new production company. The Oscar and Emmy-nominated actor has launched a new production company called Radical Act. It's going to focus on creating TV and film content for all platforms as part of that production company. He's got some television and digital programming that he's looking to produce. And on the film side, he set up an adaptation of the book Amari and the Knight Brothers with Universal Pictures, which he will produce alongside Mandeville and Genius Productions. It was also announced that Micah Price will join the company as Senior VP and Head of Development at Radical Act, which is Don Cheadle's new production company. Excuse me. Kevin Hart is in the news again. And this time it's for something fantabulous. We love Kevin Hart. STX Films has brought the high concept comic superhero pitch Night Wolf from Detective Pikachu scribes Dan Hernandez and Benji Samet, a project that Kevin Hart will star in and produce via his Heartbeat production. Heart being spelled H-A-R-T like his last name. And it's the film is a parents-esque encounter where a man, played by Kevin Hart, meets his future father-in-law for the first time, only to discover he is secretly the superhero known as the Night Wolf. That sounds hilarious in like a 5,000 different ways. I'm so excited about that. We've been talking about and following the news regarding Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and the depiction of Bruce Lee. So this week, two people spoke out against that, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Shannon Lee, Bruce Lee's daughter. And basically, Shannon Lee was like, he could just shut up about it in regards to Quentin Tarantino. She said that would be really nice, or he could apologize, or he could say, I don't really know what Bruce Lee was like. I just wrote it for my movie, but that shouldn't be taken as how he really was. And then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said that he would never pick a fight with somebody just for the sake of picking a fight or to show his prowess as a kung fu martial arts master. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was trained by Bruce Lee. They were very good friends from the time they met until he passed away. I don't think this controversy is going to go away anytime soon. Usually when there is a situation, when Oscar season starts to hit, which is we're right at the beginning of it now, when a controversy like this starts to hit, it gets really ugly and gets really embroiled. And I don't see this controversy going away anytime soon. Just like when we had Green Book this past award season, when it came out about Dr. Shirley's family not approving, but not being reached out to in regards to Dr. Shirley and his role as far as the Green Book film was concerned by the screenwriter Nick Vallelonga, who was the white dude in the movie, his daddy. So it was his son, rather. I think I said that backwards, but you guys get what I mean. Anywho, that lasted all the way through the award season, and people are still talking about that. So I don't think this Bruce Lee thing with Quentin Tarantino is going to go away anytime soon. And we'll keep you apprised of it here at Black Hollywood Live. Nathan Stewart Jarrett and Coleman Domingo joined Jordan Peele and Nia DaCosta's Candyman, which is a re-release of the old horror film back in the day. It's set to be released in June 2020 by Universal Pictures. They are going to join the cast. Coleman Domingo, yay, we love him here too. And they're already joining a couple of other cast members who've already been announced, including Tiona Paris, who was on Survivor's Remorse, and in a couple of other films. Awkwafina is set to start in The Last Adventure of Constance Verity, a film adaptation based on the fantasy adventure novel written by A. Lee Martinez. Legendary picked up the film rights and is adapting it from a spec by John Raffo. Oh, I'm down for all of that. I'm just going to go to the chat room for a second. In regards to Michael Jackson and Bruce Lee that I was speaking about, Jenna says, yeah, I agree. Do it when the person is alive, not when they're dead. Exactly. It's like, what's the point? And Marlon's like, when people are molested, sometimes it's hard to speak out. I get that too. I do. But again, do it while they're alive so that you can have, because when the person is dead, there's no resolve. You can't even get any resolve from the person because they're gone. And Xavier, hey, Xavier Jones. Xavier's like, man, Mike didn't molest nobody. They just after one of our own again. Yeah, he was crazy, but not R. Kelly Cosby crazy. Well, yeah, then there's that. I love y'all. Y'all crack me up. Let's see. Who are we talking about? We were talking about Awkwafina. So Awkwafina has a new project. It is a potential franchise vehicle for her, who received recent reviews, rave reviews, I should say, for Lulu Wang's The Farewell. If you have not seen The Farewell, please see that. Lulu Wang is killing it on the director front, and Awkwafina is giving like the performance of her life. But Constance Verity Saves the World was released last summer, and Martinez is currently writing the third book. So this is going to be a huge franchise situation for Awkwafina once it's finished. Brian Tyree Henry, one of my all-time favorites, people to interview and to have over here. He was due to was set in the, he was due to star, set to star in the sequel to A Quiet Place, A Quiet Place 2. I'm sure they'll probably change that title at some point. But he was due to star in that and now had to bow out due to scheduling conflicts. But Jaimin Hunsu is going to take his place, and we're really looking forward to that. Yeah, looking really forward to that. I love Jaimin Hunsu. I love Awkwafina and all these other people. And just going into it, I wanted to talk about, I flipped it around a little bit because I had more news than I had about The Wizard of Oz, because everybody knows The Wizard of Oz, but The Wizard of Oz is one of my favorite movies of all time. I mean, who doesn't like Dorothy and the Yellow Brick Road? Come on. And it is 80 years old, y'all. The Wizard of Oz is the same age as my mama. That cracks me up. My mama was born in 1939, and so was The Wizard of Oz. I just think that is pure comedy for a variety of reasons. But it turns 80, and I have a little bit of trivia that I found out about The Wizard of Oz. Now, when it first came out in 1939, it came out at the tail end of the Great Depression, and it was competing with my mother's other favorite all-time film and mine, Gone with the Wind. The film barely recouped its $2.8 million budget and still managed to win two Oscars for Best Original Score and Best Song. Speaking of which, that song almost didn't end up in the movie. Over the Rainbow was the biggest popular hit of 1939, but Louis B. Mayer wanted to cut it. And it almost got cut during the last test screenings in the final editing of the summer of 39, because according to one studio head, Louis B. Mayer thought the song was too sad. Well, needless to say, he was wrong, and they got them Oscars to show for that. So you guys know that pink, and not pink, but that blue and white gingham dress that Dorothy wears throughout the whole movie, that is iconic with that look. Like, people even dress up as Dorothy at Halloween time wearing that blue and white gingham dress and those red shoes and the pigtails. Well, that blue and white gingham dress was actually really pink. I know. It's hard to imagine that the dress was actually pink. So this is what the deal was. Back in the day in 1939, the way we, you know, technology always changes and shifts and whatnot. So back in 1939, the big thing on the forefront in the filming industry was Technicolor. So they filmed The Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind and a multitude of films in 1939 in Technicolor. In order for that dress to be popping in Technicolor, they made the dress pink so that when they put it in blue and white, it would just really pop on the screen. I thought that was hilarious. And that was something that I didn't even know. And I love The Wizard of Oz. Also, the red slippers, they were originally silver. The ruby red slippers were originally silver, but they ended up being red again because of the Technicolor situation. And I bet y'all didn't know this. Most people do know this, but they don't know the reason why. So there was a TV series on the air called The Beverly Hillbillies, right? And the star of that series was Buddy Ebsen, and he played Jed Clampett. Buddy Ebsen was originally supposed to be the Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz. He didn't want to be the Scarecrow, so he switched with Ray Bolger to play the Tin Man. So now Ray Bolger is the Scarecrow, and Buddy Ebsen was supposed to be the Tin Man. But what happened was, due to an allergic reaction to the aluminum dust that was in the makeup that he had to put on for the Tin Man, he was forced to leave the production and ended up being replaced by Jack Haley, who ended up being in the version of the film that we know today. And side note and trivia note, Jack Haley's son, Jack Haley Jr., and Liza Minnelli, who is Judy Garland's daughter, they ended up getting married later on in life. That's bananas. The Scarecrow and Dorothy's kids ended up getting married. I think that's pure comedy. Love that. Also, another tidbit about the Tin Man. When he cries, he's supposed to be crying oil, and the oil is supposed to rust him out. He's actually crying chocolate syrup, because when they tried the test with the mechanical oil, it didn't photograph well, so they got rid of that. And Margaret Hamilton, who played the Wicked Witch of the West, ooh, homegirl went through it. She was badly burned. You know that exit where she melts, that they throw the water on her and she melts? She got badly, badly burned. Her dress, the hat, and the broom caught on fire. Her face and her hands were severely burned. And after shooting it, there were remnants. Her face stayed green for a minute because there were remnants of copper in that green paint that she used to make her green, so they couldn't get it all off, and so she ended up with, you know, green face for a minute. And a lot of her, and if that wasn't bad enough, a lot of her scenes were severely cut or or just done altogether. And yeah. Oh, and one last tidbit I'd like to share is that so The Wizard of Oz is the 10th adaptation of this of the book The Wizard of Oz to show up on screen. The one we know from 1939, that was the 10th adaptation. And Frank L. Baum, whose book The Wizard of Oz is based on, they only paid him $75,000 for the rights to that book. I know if his people are alive now, I know they are very salty. I would be if I were them. So I think that does it for everything. When the pre-tape show that I was talking about, at the end of the show. So when I come back with the pre-tape show, what I'll be talking about at that time will be It. I saw It Chapter 2. Y'all know I am not a horror person, but I saw It Chapter 2. So I'll come back and I'll talk about It Chapter 2. Angel Has Fallen. I'm going to D23 over the weekend. That's why I will not be here. And I'll be talking about the Linda Ronstadt documentary, My Voice. So please come back tomorrow. Please come back next week at 5 p.m. There will be a show that's airing. It just won't be in real time. And I can't talk to you guys, so I'll be able to talk to you in real time. I just won't be in the studio in real time. And again, I'll be here next week. We'll be talking about It Chapter 2, Angel Has Fallen. I'll give you a little tidbit, a little preview of what's happening at D23 and tell you what D23 is and talk about the Linda Ronstadt doc. Okay, so that is it. Thank you, Michael B., Jenna James, Marlon Wallace, and Xavier Jones Jr. for joining me in the chat room. I love y'all as always. I am your girl, Carla Renata. This is the Curvy Critic at Black Hollywood Live. You can catch me right after this over at the General Hospital After Show. And If you love me, give me some thumbs up over at that YouTube to let me know that you were here. Go over to Spotify, iTunes, and iHeartRadio and show me some love there. Until the next time, I'll see you soon. Love, peace, and hair grease. Bye.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.